coming up on Artworks.
I've talked to several people since I moved to town 2 months ago, and whenever I mentioned I work at the SWOP, they said that they went there in fifth grade, and that was the last time that they were here.
Brian Wisenhunt from the SWOP Art Museum took WFIU's Yael Cassander on a tour around the Terre Haute, Indiana landmark, and we'll have that story for you in just a few moments. I'm Annie Corrigan, and later in the program, we'll get a behind-the-curtain look at what it's like in those final few mind-racing moments before a performer takes the stage. Then, Peter Noble-Kuchera gives us his take on the new quarter-life crisis film from Woody Allen, Vicky Cristina Barcelona. And I'll head to Columbus, Indiana, for a preview of this year's Driftwood Valley Music Festival. That's all ahead, here on Artworks. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Artworks. I'm Annie Corrigan. Field trips aren't the only reason to visit local art museums. They're for adults, too. Really. WFIU's Yael Cassander recently visited one museum that's trying to stress that point in Terre Haute, Indiana.
Terre Haute's SWOP Art Museum is a tiny bastion of American art on the western edge of the state. At the end of a journey past countless cornfields, farmhouses, and water towers, the SWOP occupies a proud Renaissance Revival building in downtown Terre Haute, just a half block south of an intersection so significant a century ago, it was known as the Crossroads of America. Although a few of its neighbors are boarded up now, their architectural ornament crumbling in spots, the SWOP is a well-preserved jewel.
It's kind of meant to echo a villa or a wealthy home in Rome and during the Renaissance, with really elaborate moldings and architectural details that give a sense of place to it.
The SWOP's central ground floor gallery, containing 19th and early 20th century American paintings and sculpture, has parquet floors, brown velvet settees, and apricot and pumpkin colored walls.
The warm colors in this space might strike some people as unusual, but I think they really do add an inviting feel to it, especially considering cold winters in Indiana. What nicer than to come into a space and look at some artwork with walls that give you a sense of warmth and welcome.
That was the SWOP's new executive director, Brian Wisenhunt, who came to the museum in June 2008 from the Blanton Museum of Art at the University of Texas at Austin, and previously the Wichita Art Museum in Kansas. No stranger to the regional American art museum, Wisenhunt is discovering that the SWOP tends to be a well-kept secret, or at best a distant memory, for many Terre Haute residents.
We have a program in the spring where every fifth grader in Vigo County comes to the museum. And that's a lot of times people's only experience with this institution is they came here in fifth grade. I've talked to several people since I moved to town 2 months ago, and whenever I mentioned I work at the SWOP, they said that they went there in fifth grade, and that was the last time that they were here. And we value that program and having all those students come through, but we want to create other things that ask people to come back to the museum.
Enticing community members into the SWOP is an extension of the museum's mission.
We want to make sure that we're representing our community and our geographic area, as well as the larger idea of American art.
In addition to inviting fifth graders across Vigo County to tour the SWOP, the museum hosts two community-wide exhibitions every year. There is an annual show of artwork by area school children, from elementary students to high schoolers, and the Wabash Valley Juried Exhibition, now in its 64th year.
You know, I didn't really know what to expect coming to Terre Haute, and knowing that this was getting ready to open. The work was here when I arrived, and so one of the first things I did was to come up and see what was going to be shown in the Wabash Valley Juried Exhibition. And I was just really pleased to see so many fantastic paintings and sculptures and objects.
Artists within a 150-mile radius of Terre Haute are invited to submit work to the annual exhibition.
The judge's top award is straight ahead of us.
Lisa Petroulis is the Swope's curator and the designer of the juried show, which takes up several galleries on the museum's second floor.
This marvelous landscape with, it's called Light Puddles. The artist is Barbara Fields Tim from Reelsville, Indiana. It's sort of framed in an oval way with plants, and then you see water puddles working their way to the horizon and kind of scattered with plants and birds and the seed pods. It looks like the sun is either setting or rising. So you're seeing those reflections in both the clouds and the puddles.
The Wabash Valley Juried Exhibition began in 1944 at the behest of then-director Dr. Alan Albert and curator Hazel Dodge, who had an already established model in mind.
I think it was inspired by the Hoosier Salon and the idea of, you know, creating an exhibition in this part of the state that highlights artists in the community in the region and continuing to support those artists and to be a resource for artists in the Terre Haute area, the Wabash Valley area, is something that we want to do. This year we gave over $7,000 in awards and prizes to the people in that exhibition.
Every year, a different figure from the regional art scene is invited to screen the entries. This year's judge was Margaret Hawkins.
She's the Chicago correspondent for Art News and writes for a number of other art publications. And she teaches art criticism and writing at the Art Institute of Chicago.
The diversity that Ms. Hawkins selected, I think, is what really makes it exciting, because regardless of what you like personally, I think that you'll find something here that appeals to you, because there's abstract work, there's very realist work, there's sculpture, there's ceramics, there's just a little bit of everything. But I think there's a continuity between all of it.
And it really is a mixed media exhibition. We have this really interesting sculpture that's hanging off the wall here. It looks like vines of some sort.
That's wax and metal.
The artist is Deborah Laundry from Porter, Indiana. Pine Boughs is the title of it.
And the sculpture on the ground here.
It's called The Reflection of Medusa, and it's an installation that is cut paper. It's this paper object that sits above a mirror, which kind of creates a cavity, the idea of a cavity within, and it has kind of this ethereal beauty.
It's so delicate. It looks almost like a petticoat there on the ground,
or a semi-collapsed
umbrella. And the placement of it is really unusual.
I think the wonderful thing about this exhibition is its diversity and the fact that it changes every year. Just the idea of having someone different come into the community each year and select the work, you're going to have a different sort of exhibition each time.
For WFIU's Artworks, I'm Yael Cassander.
The Swope Art Museum just wrapped up this year's juried art show at the beginning of September. You can find images from the Swope on our website, wfiu.org. A cold sweat, dry throat, nausea, racing pulse. These are just a few symptoms of a condition that afflicts millions every year. But this condition rarely, if ever, turns out to be fatal. Voices of Youth reporter Haley Henderson invites us along to experience the anxiety of performance.
La, 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 la. La, 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 la.
Haley, you're on in five.
Reality slaps me across the face once he proclaimed I was up next. Fear paralyzes me as I sit before the mirror in my dressing room. Why did he have to interrupt me? Practicing before a performance is a pacifier to my mental state. It soothes any uncertainties and reminds me of the trained voice I have prepared. My calm and collected state of mind was so excited and optimistic about the performance that lies before me. Until he disrupted it with this thing called reality. However, I suppose I cannot be too bitter. I needed to depart my supernatural escape and realize I am on next. Next. Meaning, after the person going now. Meaning, 5 minutes, like he said. Ugh, that's so soon! I've got to get out of here! I make one last fidgety glance towards the mirror to ensure I look ready to perform. My hair is frizz-free and styled. Makeup is carefully designed for stage lighting, so I may look a little strange now, but I know the lights will wash my face out a little. Therefore, a little makeup is necessary, no matter how much I detest it. Finally, my attire is simple. I don't like to look too extravagant. Nonetheless, I achieved the classy and uncomplicated look I was going for. I appear ready. If only that reflected how I feel. I swallow some honey as I leave the dressing room. It slithers down my throat, offering a relieved, calming effect, in hopes of eliminating the chance for a cracked note escaping while I perform. Tiptoeing up the stairs, each step I take only tightens the grip on my stomach, and the brick of uncertainty expands within my already cluttered frame of mind. On the second step, I become overwhelmed with doubt, and my nervous mindset formulates several panicky questions that only intensify with the escalation of the stairs. What if I forget my lyrics? What if my throat cracks? What if my makeup smears? What if they play the wrong song? What if I look bad in this lighting? What if they pronounce my name wrong when they announce it, ruining my whole entrance? What if aliens show up when I'm singing, abducting everyone for scientific purposes and then killing us all so no one ever hears the end of my song, sending those corpses into an afterlife of creatively seeking questions, never satisfying their inquiry on the complex song and how I will be performing, how it's going to end? I have finally reached the top of the stairs, after a rush of interrogation on my brain. I uneasily open the door, and surprisingly, leave my ambiguity as I close the door behind me. I see the chaos and enthusiasm of the backstage mood, and immediately realize the absurdity of my nervous breakdown of questioning when I came up the stairs. Whether every insanely terrible scenario I concocted happens, or everything goes perfectly, doesn't matter. This will be an experience. Every opportunity to sing is experience, and the chance to do what I love, perform. This performance will not be condemned by my own hesitation and inquiry, because there's nothing to question. If I knew right now how the performance was going to go, the rush and exhilaration would be meaningless, and I would gain nothing. My grasp of anticipation snowballs even further when I hear the audience from the prior performance applauding. Silence overcasts my mind, propelling a chill throughout my body. I am faced with merely a few moments before I perform, and my approach is confident, not necessarily in the performance being flawless, but I'm confident in my ability to shape any mistake into furthering my wisdom and familiarity with singing. The MC escorts me to center stage behind the crimson red curtain, telling me to wait while he announces me. He places a microphone into my hand. My clammy palms grip it tightly, and I await the dramatic opening of the curtain. I'm ready. Just let me sing. Feel as empty as
a drum. And now, presenting Haley Henderson.
For Voices of Youth Moab, this is Haley Henderson. Thanks for listening.
Don't know why I didn't come.
Still to come, a look at Woody Allen's latest project about two young women in Spain, and we'll preview a Southern Indiana festival celebrating Americana music. You're listening to Artworks, a weekly program that brings the arts to radio.
Something has to make you run. I don't know why I didn't come. My feel as empty as a drum. I don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why.
Welcome back to WFIU's Artworks. I'm Annie Corrigan. Each week, WFIU movie critic Peter Noble Kuchera goes to the movies for you, and here he is with Woody Allen's latest.
The title of the new Woody Allen film, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, refers to two women and a place. The women are in their mid to late 20s, not yet settled in life. Barcelona will be their last great adventure together before Vicky marries her fiancé, a safe-bet stockbroker type. The women are lingering over the remains of a good repast and a full glass of wine. Vicky, Rebecca Hall, is the tall, slender brunette, a dusting of freckles across the bridge of her nose, self-aware, intelligent. She's finishing a master's degree on Spanish culture, with expressive hands. She could be hidebound, a bummer, especially with a few drinks in her. Cristina Scarlett Johansson, the free-spirited amateur filmmaker and full-time wanderer, is earthy, has hair of spun white gold, and looks like she was poured into her clothes and forgot to say when. She's a creature from an earlier age, a full-lipped, milky-white 50s goddess when the girls were supposed to be curvy. "Stop looking at that man," warns Vicky. "I'm just drinking my wine," says Cristina. "Well, you're doing something because now he's coming over here." Artfully disheveled in loose-fitting layers of black linen with a loose, muscular lope, Juan Antonio, Javier Bardem, loving this, approaches the dinner table. He's a painter, we learned a little earlier, newly divorced from a passionately crazy wife. Within a few sentences, Juan Antonio has asked both women to accompany him on a private plane trip to a small town where, he says, they will eat good food, drink good wine, check out the Gaudi and Miró, and all three will sleep together. Cristina doesn't even pretend to resist temptation for a moment, and Vicky feels bound to chaperone. Well, so far, Vicky Cristina Barcelona has puttered along amiably. A distracting narrator tells us all about the characters, even what they're feeling and thinking. Much of what we want to be dramatized is glossed over in a sunny and somewhat forced glow. Aging, prolific directors like Woody Allen often get bored of the details and resort to a sort of shorthand. They've seen every kind of person and every combination of persons, so they deal in types more than specifics, a kind of metafiction. Whether you like that may determine whether you enjoy the film. But when Penelope Cruz enters the film as Juan Antonio's tempestuous, raven-tressed, crazy painter of an ex-wife, it's a jumpstart. That marriage, we learn, was doomed, even though Juan Antonio and Maria Elena love each other passionately, and I do mean passionately, some needed ingredient has always been missing. It's obvious to us, it's another girl. Soon every possibility of romantic coupling between Cristina, Juan Antonio, and Maria Elena takes place, all of it disappointingly well within a PG-13 rating. There's a bit to think about here, especially considering that Maria Elena is the perfect combination of Vicky and Cristina. The trio's love life is called into question by Vicky's fiancé, who says he won't set himself up as judge, yet calls Cristina a Mormon wife and asks if she's now bisexual. "Why do you have to label me?" she asks. "I'm just me." Well, score one for the free spirits. And we also get to know Judy, Patricia Clarkson, and Mark, Kevin Dunn, a traditional married couple. We learn that Judy is desperately unhappy and only stays because she lacks the courage to leave. Chalk up another one for the free spirits. Well, Woody Allen has artists for friends, lovers, exes, and wives. He knows all about hothouse flowers and has worked out his feelings over decades of film. It would be wrong to call him a past hippie, but he's certainly looking back now and finding plenty of doubt about free love. One character calls Cristina chronically dissatisfied, and I think that nails her. Will she ever stop looking for she doesn't even know what? And at the very end of the film, before they go down, down, down an escalator, gazing in opposite directions, Vicky gives Cristina a very strange look indeed. What do you think it means? Does it hold that key to that which eludes them? Reviewing Vicky Cristina Barcelona for WFIU, this is Peter Noble Kuchera.
Columbus's Mill Race Park is a popular destination for people wanting to enjoy the out-of-doors. Walkers, picnickers, kids playing by the water, there are some dogs running about. And of course, being that this is Columbus, Indiana, there are the unique pieces of architecture throughout the park to take in. a beautiful place to take a few deep breaths. On September 26th and 27th, this will be a very different Millrace Park. Musicians, runners, instrument builders, food vendors, informational booths, and hundreds of visitors, not just from Columbus, but from all over the country. It's the Driftwood Valley Music Festival.
If you gather round me, children, a story I will tell about pretty boy Floyd, an outlaw. Oklahoma knew him well.
That's Tim Grimm, performer, host, and a Columbus son. In his second year as the festival's guiding spirit, he's expanded it from just a music concert into something bigger. A two-day festival with an iron pour, instrument builders, a sustainable living fair, and a race. The iron pour on Friday night starts off the festivities. Throughout the week, community members can purchase and then design tiles to be cast in iron. That's starting at 5 p.m. Then, once it's dark, there'll be one final iron pour to light up the Columbus sky. Quite a sight to be seen. Local Americana musicians will perform throughout the evening, and that's all for free. Then wake up bright and early Saturday morning and make sure to get your stretching in for the 12th annual Mill Race, Race and Mayor's Walk. There's something for everyone, if you're a running enthusiast or an amateur walker. 5 different races in total, from a 15K with a wheelchair division to a kids' fun run. The courses wind through the heart of downtown Columbus, through parks, over a covered bridge. And those of you trying to run a personal best time, great news, this is a flat course. Easy on the legs. Proceeds benefit the Healthy Communities Initiative of Bartholomew County. Then, on to the festival. The Sustainable Living Fair and the Instrument Builders Exhibition are new this year. It's all about bringing together like-minded people interested in traditional musics, traditional ways of life, and green living. Vendors will have earth-friendly and local products on display, and you can get information on recycling and sustainable transportation. Then take a few steps away and watch a drum or a ukulele being built. 10 different instrument makers will be on hand playing some and building some, all part of the Traditional Arts Indiana.
Way down in Mississippi, where I was bred and born.
But let's get back to the music.
I believe that will forever be my native home.
Americana music is this umbrella term for bluegrass and blues, to folk rock, to traditional country music and rural music. Really, it's all about the singer-songwriter. Tim Grimm called on his friends, some of the best in the business, to come play at the Driftwood Festival. Steve Forbert, Greg Trooper, the Bannister family. But it's Rory Block, one of the few female musicians on the bill, who has some people really excited. Grimm calls her one of the best blues singers and finger players in the business, and she's a 2-time winner of the Traditional Blues Female Artist of the Year, given by the W.C. Handy Awards.
Well, I can be drunk and
the Driftwood Valley Music Festival, bringing Americana music and values to Columbus on September 26th and 27th. You can find out more information about the festival and the Mill Race race on their website, driftwoodvalleymusic.com. For a complete listing of all the arts events in the Columbus area, visit the Columbus Area Arts Council's website at artsincolumbus.org. And as always, our website is a resource for information on all sorts of community events, including the Driftwood Valley Music Festival, wfiu.org. For WFIU's Artworks, I'm Annie Corrigan. Thanks for listening. Contributing to this edition of Artworks were Yael Cassander and Peter Noble-Kuchera. Special thanks to Brian Wisenhunt, Lisa Petrulis, Haley Henderson, and Tim Grimm. Our producer is David Wood, and WFIU's program production manager is Carrie Boyce. You can listen to Artworks on your schedule by subscribing to our weekly podcast. Details can be found at wfiu.org. And if you would like to suggest a topic for Artworks, send an email to wfiu@indiana.edu. Artworks is a production of WFIU. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer.